Hello there, guys. Welcome to Coffee Talk with Rob and Greg, episode 39. I'm Rob.
Hi, guys. I'm Greg. And today we have a man who calls himself the Hef, which I love. A great name. David Heffernan. Now, David, did you want to tell us a little bit more about what you do at the moment? This is a very interesting area.
Yes, certainly. Well, it's important to say that I am the Hef and not the Hoff. I know a lot of people do get that mixed up, but I've not got any red swim shorts, so everybody's safe on this call. Basically, what I am is a coach, trainer, and speaker specialising in anxiety, stress, resilience, and workplace well-being. All through the lived experience of mental health, homelessness, prostitution, and various other lovely experiences of my past, I've seen the best and the worst of human behaviour, and I'm very much an expert in grief and bereavement as well, having served over 3,000 funerals in the past. Hundreds upon hundreds of grieving adults. So quite an interesting backstory, but all quite positive in the fact that it's led me to who I am today.
Yeah, and we haven't actually had anyone in your niche or area before, so it's fascinating for Rob and I to get someone on that is talking about what are the very important areas of life, and often what we don't always talk about, you know, grief and trauma and things like that. And how did you get into this sort of area?
By default, really. At 5 years old, I started my local primary school in Salford, Great Manchester. And because I was quite good at reading from a very early age, the priest came over one day to the school and said, "You're going to be an altar boy." I didn't have any choice in it. And at 5 years old, I served my very first funeral, which wasn't normal. I was 5 years old. I had beautiful blonde hair. I looked like a Milky Bar kid. And the coffin was higher than me. I was smaller than the coffin. And I mean, about 120 grieving adults in front of you as well at 5 years old. It was a very surreal experience, but it soon became my world, you know, so I embraced it and just got on with it. I didn't know any different.
I mean, it must have been quite traumatic at that age. I expect, is it still quite vivid in your mind that you're introduced to that?
I remember the very first funeral that I served. I remember it's the day. I remember the looks of the faces in the front row. I remember the coffin. I remember every part about it at 5 years old. Also, as well, at 5 years old, I remember going to the local cinema to watch Grease. Yeah. And I don't know if it's because of the funerals that I've got such a good memory, but I remember watching Grease at 5 years old at the local Cannon Cinema in Salford. And I remember the advert before it was for Coca-Cola. Yeah. And it had these American skateboarders with flares and jeans on and what have you, going on these skateboards. Yeah. Don't remember anything else, but just remember this advert before Grease. And so, yeah, I believe, as you know, a lot of trauma, the vast majority of trauma that goes in adulthood is born from childhood. And, you know, kids remember a lot more than they believe and understand that they actually know about. And that just stays with you. But fortunately, because of the people that I was mixing with, it was quite positive and influential in that way. So I was able to reframe and reshape these experiences to the positive rather than the negative.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, like, sorry, Rob, I was going to say, I'll let you get in there now. But with trauma, it is an interesting thing, isn't it? Because I can understand it very well as well. And it's often these very intense, vivid, colourful images that, certainly all the research and training I've done to help myself has taught me to sort of like change the imagery in some way or sort of send it off into the distance or change it and make it into sort of a cartoon or something. So it takes the intensity out of it and sort of changes your relationship with it or your neuro association so that you can essentially sort of move on or move forward. And is that something you've had to do, Dave, in your past a little bit or?
I've been quite lucky in the fact that I speak a lot now on stages and, you know, with corporates at their events and stuff. As a result of doing this speaking work, I've had to look back at my life in minute detail and go into areas that I've never really revisited in the past. And that was like therapy in itself. It was great. You know, there's a lot of tears shed, a lot of pain gone through. But one thing that I realise is we can't control the past. The past is gone. You know, and I guarantee no matter what experience we go through, and this is through many of my own personal experience and speaking to thousands of people over the years, I guarantee no matter what experience we go through, whether it's a traumatic experience or just an adverse situation, there is a positive and there is a learning curve in every single one of them. But too many people try and focus on the negative stuff, which then puts them into a deep funk and depression and trauma and various other things. Whereas if you actually, from the offset, when you start looking at this, start looking at the positive, looking at the learning curve, it will help you grow a lot quicker and also banish some of that fear and regret and forgiveness issues that you had in the past.
Totally agree.
I was going to ask about, because at the moment, obviously, with the current situation, there's probably a lot of people that are going through difficult times and they're having to, you know, grieve because they may have lost loved ones to this horrible, horrible, you know, virus that's affecting us at the moment. What would you say people can do in terms of, you know, managing that grief and, you know, helping to get past that situation and essentially move on with their lives?
One of the most horrible parts of grief is regret, you know, and there'll be a lot of regret over this period where people will be saying, I should have brought lockdown rules to go and see him, or I should have done this, or I wish I would have made that last phone call before, you know, he died, or whatever it may be. And there'll be people as well who've not been able to speak to them just before the person died. You know, you keep on hearing the news that, you know, hospitals have set up Zoom calls for people who are taking the last breath so they could actually connect with the family. But there'll also be other family members who won't be on that Zoom call. So they'll be having a lot of extra added grief onto it as well. So there's going to be a hell of a lot of regret. And the fact is I always say control the controllables. And it's very difficult when you're going through grief. You know, nobody's the same. Everybody's different when they're going through grief. But if you can control the controllables and accept, you know, there was nothing much you could do. You know, you've got a lifetime of memories with this person, yet you focus on that one nasty side, you know, that drags them down and it drags them down. And if they focus on all the good stuff that has happened in the past, you know, the body may be gone, but the memories and the soul still lives on, you know. And if you can just attach onto the positive side and actually attach onto all the good memories that you had, you know what I mean, and not just focus on this one part that's happened, you know, you can't take, you know, people can't take those memories away, you know what I mean, they can't take that soul away, you know, what he gave or that person gave to everybody around them, that aura, that can't be taken. You know what I mean? So if you can focus on how they made you feel, life will be a lot easier to bear. I mean, you'll be able to get through the grieving process, but you've got to cry. You've got to be angry. You know, there'll be a lot of anger out there, a lot of anger out there. And just embrace it. You know what I mean? There's not one size fits all when it comes to grieving. And this is unprecedented. You know, most people get to have that last phone call, or most people get to go and visit them, or, you know, even in the chapel of rest, they get to actually see the body. That's not possible now. You know what I mean? So there will be undoubtedly, and, you know, expectingly, there's going to be a lot of anger. And you have to let that pass. You know what I mean? You have to go through that. But don't keep in that state for too long. You know what I mean? Try and find the positives, try and find the learning curves in it, and life will be a lot easier to bear. You know, and then once you start thinking of the good stuff, all the positive memories, you know, there's parts of the brain that will filter all the shit out that we don't need. And, you know, you say, you know, you get what you focus on. So if you're focusing on all the good memories and all the positive stuff, then more positive stuff will come your way. More good stuff will come your way. But if you're focused on the negative stuff and the hatred, that will build up inside and you'll become a very hateful and angry person. And it's a lot harder to get out of that funk. So just try and focus on the positives and the learning curves and you'll get through it.
I think that's a great bit of advice. I'm finding that a lot now with, like, when you look at social media and particularly Twitter, it's just full of, you know, negativity and people moaning and complaining about stuff at the moment. Like, what would you say are some of the things that people can do to kind of, if they're in a bit of a bad place mentally, what can they do to kind of, you know, to get themselves out of that bad place and help to make themselves feel a bit more positive?
Well, first of all, it's all about timing. You know, I've spoken to many people where the timing's not been right. You know what I mean? They're still, there's a comfort zone in depression. You know, people get love when they're depressed. Mm. You know, when they put these things out, saying, oh, I feel really bad, I feel horrible, I feel this. You know, you get a lot of love from that. And once you start putting your head above the parapet and say, you know what, I'm happy now, I'm content, I love who I am, then that love sort of falls away because you're not relying on that love. You know what I mean? And that's quite scary. That is quite scary for somebody. So they stay deep down into the depression because they like what they get. You know what I mean? On a subconscious level, they like what they're getting. They're getting that love. They're getting that support. And once you stand up on your own two feet and say, I'm content, I'm happy, I don't need anything, this is me, all of a sudden, you start thinking, shit, where's that support? Where's that love? Where's that? And it, you know, people panic and go back into it. You know what I mean? Mm. But I always say to people, especially when they're depressed or anxious, you know, changing out of depression, out of anxiety, and we can all get through depression. We can all get on the other side of depression. It's going to be painful. It's going to be painful. Any change that's significant is always painful. There's going to be an element of pain to it. So I always say to people, I said, are you in pain now, emotionally or physically? He said, well, yeah. I said, right, well, unfortunately, there's going to be an element of pain coming out of this. So which pain do you want? Do you want the pain that's temporary, that will put you into a better life and more content? Or do you want the pain that's long-term, that's going to keep you down there? And when you simplify it that way, people always say, well, I want the temporary pain. I said, right, are you ready? Are you serious? Do you want to get out of this? I'd say, yeah, then we'll work with them. And guaranteed, they'll always come out the other side with a totally brand new perspective. But it's just making that decision and making sure the time is right. So many people want to save everybody by words, by being there and say, oh, you know, I want to help you, I want to support you. You can't unless they're ready to. You know what I mean? And that's where a lot of people get really hung up on, is like they don't see that it's about the other person. They want to try and help because most people are caring. Most people are kind and want to help. But unless they're not ready to help themselves, no matter what I say or you say or anybody else says, it's not going to help. Mm. Apart from, I am here when you are ready to listen without judgment. Once you say those words and actually stand by them, you know, we see so much on social media say, I'm here for you, hon. And I've had people who phoned me up in the past who, you know, I've had suicidal thoughts and what have you. And they always say, you know, that I phoned my mate, but he didn't answer, you know, and I was ready to stop myself. But this was 3 o'clock in the morning. So that person who they phoned was in bed, rightfully so. But because of the language used on social media, this person who's ready to, you know, end the life, they're not thinking logically. They're saying and having it confirmed, actually, this person genuinely doesn't care because he's not answered the phone. He said, I'm going to be here for him. But he's not. So that makes sense to me. Nobody cares about me. I'm ending it. Mm. We have to be so careful with the language that we use. And I always put on social media, if I say anything like that, I say, look, please bear in mind that I'm not going to be there 24/7. There are alternatives that you can use, like Samaritans, Papyrus, or whoever, mind. Please go to them if I don't answer the phone, or go to them direct, you know. And we need to give expectations and boundaries to people. And too many people want to be the hero, but they're actually being the anti-hero as a result of it. Mm. And that's a shame because people are coming from a good place. It's just that the person who's trying to end their life are not thinking logically and thinking this person's got a bedtime routine. So just be careful.
That's some very important points there, actually. And once again, I've learned a great deal because it's so easy to think you know about a subject or an area or something if you've been through it or whatever, but actually only listening to someone else's different perspective on the subject, you start to go, oh, actually, yeah, that's a really good point, because I've always felt like the kind of person who wants to help others. And I think I get it from my mum, you know, because she was always a bit depressed and stuff. So she would want the love and everything else, but she'd be happy to help. But then sometimes, as you said, you know, you can't really always be there for someone, but yet they can perceive it as not caring. And so I think you're absolutely right. You know, using your words in the right way, such an important thing, isn't it? And social media can really be misconstrued in the way people say things and so on and so forth. So Yeah, I mean, there's some real great learning processes coming out of this for me already, you know?
I think for me as well, it's like, I've not necessarily thought about it in the way that you said, like, you know, if I see people that are posted saying they're struggling a bit with their mental health, I might message them saying, like, here, if you need me. But I've not really thought about, like, how you said, how they might see it as if they message me and I don't get back to them, that I don't care. But it might be that, like I say, I'm asleep, or maybe I'm in the middle of doing some work or something. It's not that I don't care about that person, but because I haven't specifically said I'm not here for you all the time, but if I can, I will try to be. You know, I think that's very powerful what you said there. And even talking about, you know, suicide and things like that, in Bristol, we have the suspension bridge. And because people try and jump off that bridge quite regularly, they actually had to paint onto the bridge in several places the number for the Samaritans.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's a big history with the bridge. You know, they said back in the Victorian times that the women used to jump over it with their big dresses on, and some of them survived because their dresses were so big. I don't know whether that's just one of those myth things, but yeah, this has actually been an extremely amazing eye-opener for me so far, and I'm sure for you as well, Rob. But it helps us to have more tools as well with our immediate families and friends, doesn't it, by learning this stuff.
The thing is, once somebody gets to that proverbial bridge where they want to jump off, so many signs and so many signals will have been missed. You know, I mean, it's very rare that somebody just wakes up one morning and they've not had any sort of mental health decline or some resilience issue where they've not been able to put things to bed. It's very rare that somebody just wakes up and says, I'm going to kill myself now. I'm going to end my life. You know what I mean? Subtle changes will have happened in people. So they might, an extrovert may well become a little bit more introverted. They may become a little bit more aggressive in the tone. They may, whatever. And it's picking up on these little subtle changes in friends and family and asking the question, are you okay? You know, and then shutting up and listening. You know, and if you need to ask it a second time, then ask it a second time. But you can't ever drive anybody to suicide by saying, are you suicidal? So ask the question. You know, I mean, if you genuinely feel and you're comfortable in asking that question and comfortable in taking it on, should they say, yes, I am, and knowing where to signpost people, you can't drive somebody to suicide. It's probably going to help them more by you asking that question. You know, and so many people are scared of asking that question, thinking they're going to drive them to suicide. But if they're suicidal, they're already at that point. You know what I mean? You can't drive them to the next step.
Yeah.
But by asking that, automatically you're letting down their barriers a little bit and actually saying, actually, somebody cares enough to ask the question. So I'll open up. And, you know, most people do open up and they'll just come out. But the other thing as well is, how many people do you hear saying, oh, I didn't recognize anything in it. The last week, he was really calm and chilled. And then it came out of nowhere. That's because they've already put the affairs to bed. They've sorted out the will. They've sorted out the childcare situation. They've sorted out everything. They've got everything absolutely as it should be. And then they're ready to go. You know what I mean? So if you've seen somebody who's been quite erratic or aggressive or completely different change of character, then all of a sudden they start being really calm and chilled and totally different to the previous weeks and months, that's when you need to start asking the question as well, is everything okay? You know what I mean? But it's just being aware of these little sort of changes, you know, and if you're not comfortable enough, you know, find somebody who is, you know, just leave a note with them and say, look, you said, I don't, you know, whatever, I'm not an expert in any way, but please, if you are struggling, here's a number. You know, and give them that opportunity to, because that still shows you care. You know what I mean? Just by doing these little sort of things will help more people than you'll realize. You know what I mean? But the biggest thing is to listen without judgment. So many people say, oh, yeah, I'm here for you. I'll listen. And then as soon as somebody says, yeah, but I feel like a failure. Oh, you're not a failure. I can't believe you're being so silly. Don't say that. You're not a failure. No judgment. He feels like a failure. So that is real to him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or her. Do not try and put your slant on it by saying you're not failing, you're not failing. Listen without judgment. And by him opening up, then you can start working together about what the best course of action is. you know, looking at some of the positives that have happened. Actually, do you remember that time? Do you remember that time? You made me feel really good about myself, etc. And then just rehumanizing him again helps so much more people than just coming back and, oh, you're not a failure. You're not this, you're not that. I'm telling you I am. And it's very real to me to the point that I'm trying to end my life. So don't judge me. I don't need judging. You know what I mean? And that's the most, that's the part where a lot of people fall down on, is they want to get the answers, and you can't get the answers. All you can do is listen without judgment and then signpost where necessary.
So ultimately what you're saying there is it's about listening to a person and sort of, you know, asking them questions to find out, you know, why they're in that place, ultimately making them feel like they're being heard.
Yeah, that's all they want. They want to be heard. You know, and we live busy lives. You know, we've become, even though we're more connected than ever, we've become so disconnected.
It's weird.
You know what I mean, we've lost the art of conversation. We've lost the art of actually looking at sort of changes in people. You know, I see it now. I do a lot of networking meetings, and I'll see people's eyes, and they look dead. You know what I mean? Somebody was complaining about my foresight, my talk the other day. And when I looked at the person's eyes, I clearly have triggered something in them. You know what I mean? They made an issue about how it was swearing or whatever. But somebody had screenshot the actual meeting with the Zoom call, you know, the boxes. And just looking at her, and it was talking about a forgiveness issue. Just looking at this person, their eyes were dead, and you could see, you know, and this is from years and years and years of being able to sort of look at people and work out whether it's a fear, regret, forgiveness issue, whatever. You could see that there was something there. You know, I mean, everybody's got a story. When somebody's being aggressive to you or being a bit of an ass, I always say, what's your story? You know what I mean? Especially if somebody's never been an ass to you before, then all of a sudden they're becoming a bit of a silly person towards you. Are aggressive, I always say, what's your story? If they want to tell them, fine, I can help them. If they don't want to tell them, I'll back off and make them aware that, you know what, I'm not judging you. You know, clearly you've got something going on. When you're ready, I'm here. You know what I mean? And I'll make it clear that I will listen without judgment. But I don't ever get hateful on anybody. You know, there's so much stuff going on about this Dominic Cummings guy. You know what I mean? And I've not got no time for this government. You know, I've seen the damage that's been caused to the most vulnerable in society. You know, I mean, my local MP was the head honcho of the DWP, who has caused so much pain and misery to the disabled section of society.
Right.
So I've got very little time for these people. But the bile and the hatred that is being spewed against this Dominic Cummings, and I personally think he's done wrong. But how does attacking his family, how does attacking his father and his mother, you know, apparently there's reporters and people going to his father's farm now, causing them pain.
Oh, no.
How does that make them a better person than this person? It doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
You know what I mean? We need to be sensible. You know what I mean? And everybody's got a story. You know what I mean? We can't change. Yeah, we've got democracy. We can, you know, vote these people out when 4 years comes down the line. That's pretty much all we can control. You know what I mean? But by spewing hatred and bile against these people and what have you, it's just turning you into a hateful person. And it is such a negative emotion. I've got a band here. I don't know if you can see it. It's from New York, the Memorial Museum.
Oh, yeah.
9/11 Memorial. And it basically says, love is stronger than hate.
Love that.
You know, when you're stood in that memorial, by that memorial, the fountain, where the towers fell, you realise, you know what, hate is such a disgusting emotion to have.
Totally.
You know what I mean? We just need to forgive freely, love each other, without being all hippies and hugging everybody, but just accept that everybody's got their own story and their own struggles that they're going through. You know what I mean? All we can do is love each other and be there when they need it.
I remember totally
being
agree.
At a place in New York, you know. Did you go there, Rob?
I haven't, no. I've not been to New York, but it's on the bucket list for sure. It's on the bucket list. I've seen Hef's pictures.
So moving, yeah, because, you know, obviously you realise what actually went on there and the scale of it. And then you see the beauty of these waterfalls. And, you know, out of all the craziness of New York going on, you suddenly get to this place and it's just this sort of silence, isn't there?
It's almost like there's an invisible zone that you walk through, and then all of a sudden everybody's just reflective and just calm. Mm. I remember there was a gentleman on the corner of one of those fountains. There was a gentleman's name, and I was walking around the museum, and I came to the part where it was all the images and pictures of the people that had fallen. And I saw a video, and they were talking about this person that I'd seen, and that was it then. I just broke down. I just absolutely broke down. Mm. And I got three quarters of the way around it, and my wife, she was saying, I can't cope with this now. It's just too heavy. It's just too much. And I agreed with her. You know, there was people there taking pictures when they shouldn't have been taking pictures.
Yeah.
And I could feel myself feeling that anger. Mm. And I thought, I've got to remove myself from this situation now because that's not me.
Yeah.
But there was one, I was talking about this on the talk that I did this morning. There's one woman that I've been fascinated for years, and it was a lady called Edna Sintrin, who she was a red-haired woman who was on the 97th floor. She was stood on the windowsill,
right,
where the plane had actually gone into the tower, so a point of entry. And she was stood on this on the window looking down, and she was labelled the red-haired woman because nobody knew who she was at the time. And she had a decision to make because she looked down from 97 floors, looked back to the flaming, burning inside, you know, on the 97th floor. So she had a choice to make. Do I go back into the burning building and die, or do I jump off and die? What a choice. What a decision to have to make. And I was walking around the museum, and there was a huge canvas. And right in the middle of this canvas was her, stood on this window. And again, that was the two moments within that museum where I just broke down. And mm-hmm. it was just so relevant to the way I've sort of looked back at the 9/11 attacks. Mm. And I found a eulogy of a niece a few years later. And she was talking about a two-year-old son saying, I'm going to teach him to forgive freely, you know, not to have hate in his heart, you know. And this is somebody who could quite rightly be full of bile and hatred.
Right.
You know what I mean? But she was talking about forgiving freely, and, you know, and when people like this can talk like that. And there was one from the Manchester Ariana Grande concert, Martin Hetz, who died, who was quite a popular figure, you know, in the gay village, and he was, he had quite a big following. Mm. His mum came out and said, I forgive the terrorists.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? These are the people that we need to be putting on a pedestal.
Right.
You know what I mean? These are the ones that we need to be looking at as leaders. You know
true
what I mean?
True heroes because and leaders.
The ones who can forgive such, you know, atrocities, you know, that have been so personal to them. You know what I mean? If they can do it, then we've all got a chance. You know what I mean? We've all got a chance. And I work with anybody, and I said this on a recent talk that I did. If anybody has ever got any forgiveness issues that they have to deal with, because I've had to do it myself with a Jamaican yardie that murdered somebody that I was looking after in prostitution. I will always work with them for free to deal with this forgiveness issue, because it is the most empowering and the most life-changing thing that you can do for yourself and for others. Once you've got rid of that forgiveness and been able to forgive, your life just opens up magically, and it is such a weight lifted. You know what I mean? I will never, and for 20, 30 years, I've never charged anybody who I've worked with for forgiveness issues.
Wow.
It is such a powerful, life-changing thing that you can do. And so many people take hatred and forgiveness issues to the grave. And
that's very kind of you, because, you know, I know you may not see it that way yourself, because obviously you want to be able to help people, and that's a wonderful thing in the world that we live in, where people can be more selfish. Not that they're bad people, but they can sort of think, oh, I got mine, you got yours, and that's it, sort of thing. But, you know, there's three of us here, we're three guys, and obviously a lot of guys don't always talk about their feelings and stuff about, you know, and as you said earlier about the character of someone, they may change, and we may not be armed with the skills or tools to notice those nuances or differences in them. But what would you say there to those guys who, you know, they feel that they're too scared of looking weak, or their ego's in the way, and they don't want to talk about their stuff, but yet they might be suffering, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a myth, the fact that men don't talk. I used to be in charge of a pre and postnatal depression charity for the men's section, and I had literally thousands of people on this Facebook page and just me as the admin. And it consumed my whole life for about a year, year and a half. It had average response time for messages, something like 20 seconds, something stupid like that. Yet the main forum for the women had 20 odd admins, and it was average response time, 3 hours. I was just totally consumed. And I was getting this message after message saying, you know, I really hate my wife because she was obviously got postnatal depression, but the men didn't understand. I really hate my wife. I may have been a domestic abuse issue. And so I'm, you know, I feel like I'm going to kick my wife's head in, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, all these real sort of heavy subjects coming into me. And it's a myth because I just opened up. I said, look, this is like the online pub. You know what I mean? Just come in.
Nice.
Forget all the shit. And said, if you want to talk, there's somebody at the bar who's ready to talk. You know what I mean? And listen. Just treat it as a way just to relax and chill out. And once people, once men are given the forum, you know, there's some amazing groups out there like Andy's Man Club, you know, Lynn Mindful Group, Time for Change, which I'm part of.
Fidel as well. He set up his Modern Man Group.
Exactly. Fidel, you know, he's got some great content in there. Absolutely great content. And, you know, men do open up. And I think we need to get rid of this myth that men don't open up, because that's just stigmatizing men. And, you know, I mean, men are ready and willing to open up if you give them a platform. Yeah. And actually be there as a support mechanism rather than just try to actually solve it for them. I think if you give them the open platform where they can talk freely and without judgment, it's been proved. You know, in rugby, they've got the offload program, they've got the heads up campaign. In football, men will talk if you give them that platform.
Good to know.
I think that's a great note to end it on there, Hef. I really, you know, massively appreciate you coming on, and you shared some absolute like gold content in terms of how people can, you know, manage grief and their mental health. So just any closing points as to any final tips or things people can do if they're really struggling at the moment, and also the best places people can go to find out more about you?
Yes, certainly. Well, the three things that I live my life by every single day without fail is control the controllables, find the positive, find the learning curve in every situation that you find yourself in. If you do that, then life will be really, really stress-free. Also, don't put any energy into stuff that is way outside your influence. You know, I can't stop Dominic Cummings from being the person he is, so I'm not going to put my energy in towards that, for example. Right. Also, as well, what I do every single day without fail is I will sit in silence for an hour, which I've got two boys, is almost very difficult, in fairness, but I sit in silence for an hour, and I guarantee I'm the same, and I've been doing this for years. I will get that little voice in there saying, oh, you need to do the pots. I've never wanted to do the pots in my life until I sit in silence. You know what I mean? Or the dog needs walking, or the cat needs walking, or whatever. And this little voice in the head will always try and stop you from doing what is good for you. And it's there. It's just the ego, basically. And it's there to perversely protect you. So what I do is, so many people say you need to clear your thoughts, get rid of your thoughts. No. We need to appreciate the thoughts are there. You know what I mean? Just imagine them like a little bubble flowing in front of you. No, our thoughts can't hurt us. The reaction to the thoughts can. You know what I mean? So allow the thoughts being there. And once you're genuinely okay with them being there, just say, I'm okay with you being there. Or just smile and be that content with them being there, because they'll disappear. Ego loves resistance. So if you try and resist these thoughts, the louder and louder and louder they become. And this is where people get into anxiety and fear and depression and what have you, because they're trying to resist these thoughts. Allowing them to be there, all of a sudden, after about 20, 25 minutes, I guarantee it'll be complete silence. And then you'll start tuning into your intuition and your gut. And I always say, if the issue that you've got, say you might hear this little voice saying, go outside. If it's got lots of answers as to why you should go outside, that's ego. If there's no reasoning behind it, just you need to go outside, that's your intuition. Follow that. Don't follow the one with loads of reasons behind it, because it's just ego. You know what I mean? And the one thing I'll leave you with is, more people are fearful of public speaking than they are dying. I think public speaking is number one and dying is number four, which is ludicrous because when you look at it sort of logically, that means that more people would rather be in the coffin than at the front of the altar delivering the eulogy.
Yeah.
Play games with it, embrace this fear, embrace this, you know, just have fun with it.
So it's like
life will be so much, you know, life will be so much calmer and content.
Yeah. That's some, as Rob said, just to reflect on that quickly, there's some absolute gold there and stuff I'll be listening back to better grow from it, really, because there's a lot I've read on the acceptance of this, that and the other, but I like the way that you come from different angles, which I've never really considered before, and this, our listeners are going to love this stuff, and it's really going to help a lot of people. So thanks from the bottom of our hearts for coming on.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Cheers, really appreciate Rob. And Rob, did you want to finish with anything?
No, it's been amazing to have you on. Just let our listeners know where they can find you if they're potentially interested in reaching out to you for help, and where the best places are to find you online.
The place where I hang out most is LinkedIn, which is Dave Heffernan Speaker.
Yeah.
If you look on there. On my website, I've got a live chat button on there as well. And if it does say online, then anybody who's got an issue that they just need sorting quickly, send me a message and I'll give them a ring back immediately. If it says online, I'll give them a ring back immediately. And I'll sort it within 10, 15 minutes, put them in a better place and move forward.
All right. I will make sure to leave links to all of that in the description for the podcast. Thank you so much, Dave, for coming on. Some really great insights from you there.
Thank you, Dave.
And you got to talk as well, Rob. Well done.
I did indeed.
Charles Greg is listening.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much, guys. We will bring it to an end there. Don't forget, obviously, to subscribe to the podcast if you are new. And also leave us a rating. That really helps to get the podcast found. See you next time, guys.
Thanks, guys.